Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Monsteropolis is a
show about something. This is Monsteropolis, a show about monsters, anomalies, and legends, the official podcast of Small Town Monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined, as always, by my pal, Mark Matzke.
Hello, and happy Halloween to you.
Ooh. Oh, that was a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, Andy visited us for a moment. with us in spirit. So this is our special Halloween episode. Before we get to the spooky, frightful topic of Halloween, we have letters sent to us by dear listeners to monsteropolismail@gmail.com, the most professional email address in all of history.
Ever.
So if you want to send us an email to have us read on the show, monsteropolismail@gmail.com, you can email us about topics you'd like to hear us discuss, or a topic we did discuss, or you can tell us how we are two self-absorbed urban fools. You think that guy's still out there?
I hope so.
I didn't mean like... I mean like dead. Yeah. Do you think he's still listening?
No, he's gone.
Yeah, he's moved on. I hope he's still listening.
In our third incarnation, that's going to be the name of the show.
Yeah. Didn't we talk about it at one point for this show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Letters. Let's get into those.
So in my ignorance, I have to admit that I'm not sure if I've read this letter before. So anyway, from Joe. And Joe writes, Hello guys, just finished watching Terror in the Skies and loved it. As a lifelong Illinois resident, I enjoyed seeing familiar places, especially Alton, since I live a short distance from there in Springfield. I also geeked out when I found out that Mark is from Decatur, as I work in Decatur. I'm an aspiring documentary filmmaker and enjoy watching small town films, studying how you do edits, transitions, effects, etc. as a way to better my own methods. I think Terror in the Skies is one of your best in terms of cinematography and editing. I find your podcast episodes discussing the making of your films to be extremely insightful, and I always go back to watch the movie to get a better grasp of what you talk about. I wanted to ask, was Area X creepy or did it feel weird in any way? I am not a true Bigfoot believer, but have always enjoyed the stories, and I secretly hope that it is a real species. You guys all seem quote-unquote normal, so it's nice to hear your interpretations of events. Keep up the great work, and looking forward to more stories. Again, that's Joe.
Cool. This is a really cool email.
It is.
We almost could have done a whole episode about this.
Right.
One thing with Illinois... Zach was born and raised, not raised too long, but he was born in Illinois, and we went to, on the way down to Alton, we actually stopped at his hometown, the town he was born in.
Where was it?
Very small town, not far from Decatur.
Okay.
Actually.
Wow.
Yeah, so you and Zach.
We might be
essentially
related.
Essentially brothers. You guys look exactly alike, too.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, Terror in the Skies is like when I watch it compared to our other films, there's a professionalism to that one that stands out for me. I don't know why that is, but it just kind of like there, it might be, I don't know. It's so different too from like Momo coming. They both came in the same year. I said this at the beginning of the year that you were going to get like the full breadth of like documentary styles over the course of this year, just from STM. But it's so different from Momo. Like it really, it's two completely different storytelling styles, but I'm glad you liked Terror in Disguise. I do too. It's a runner up for one of my favorites. And I think if you like Terror in Disguise, you're going to love the Mothman Legacy. Cause we're kind of like, as much as Mothman Legacy is a sequel to the Mothman of Point Pleasant, it's actually more of a sequel to Terror in Disguise. It's dealing in the same area as the Mothman in Point Pleasant, although it's going to be on a much larger scale, including Ravenna, Ohio. It's going to bear a lot of similarities to Terror in the Skies. And the opening is sort of I don't want to get too in depth this early on, but the opening is going to mirror a lot of things about the opening to Terror in the Skies. And I think people will dig it.
The thing I liked about this email too is that, you know, Joe said he likes the podcast episodes discussing the making of the films.
Yeah,
that's cool. I'm glad.
Yeah, because I can't tell.
Right, right.
We love recording them. If you're a listener and you like those episodes, please let us know, because it's like one of those things we don't know. We're still kind of finding our way with the show, and I mean, for anyone that listens, it's obvious this is like a labor of love, I think, more than anything. Like Mark has to drive down an hour and a half just to get here. So he's driving 3 hours round trip to do the show, right? Is that right?
Essentially.
So 3 hours round trip to do the show. And we don't make any money on the show. It's more of our way of continuing to do something together. Mm-hmm. We've been podcasting now for like 5 years together.
Yeah.
Or longer? 5 years?
No, it's
5 years.
About it. And this show is a year old.
Yeah, this show's over a year old.
Yeah.
So. Oh, maybe you're right.
It's sometimes.
Yeah, it's
right
it's,
around
it's
now.
It's coming up now. Yeah.
That would have been a good episode.
1 year anniversary special, but we're oblivious as to when that actually happened. So yeah, we're still kind of like trying to find our way on the episode and like the, or on the show and like figure out what exactly the direction of the show is. So if you have thoughts and ideas on that don't call us names, please share them with
it's
us.
It's like a Seinfeld approach. It's a podcast about nothing.
My favorite episodes to record are those ones where we're just talking about the making of the movies, like the one you and I did about Terror when it came out, right. Like some of those ones,
and even
the round writing table we
Momo,
did,
yeah,
that was a lot of fun. The writing Momo one, those are things we enjoy. As far as Area X,
Was it creepy or did it feel weird in any way?
I mean, it really didn't. The creepiest thing about it was a little surreal, like. Because I had spent, I guess one of the things that got me really into the idea that Bigfoot could exist would be the Bigfoot show that Brian Brown did. And he spent tons of time talking about Area X on that show. Mm-hmm. And so I had listened to it for years and I as goofy as this is going to sound, like I kind of imagined what it would be like going there. And, so that it was surreal going in. I mean, it was creepy in the sense that you are literally descending into a valley 2.5 hours from civilization. It's creepy in the fact that if someone gets hurt, more than likely it's going to be a really difficult time getting you out. If someone gets seriously hurt, it's going to be a really difficult time getting you out in time to make it better. You know, they have snake bite kits and stuff in there, but there's rattlesnakes everywhere. There's I saw two black widows in like a very short span of time getting in there. And so just being in the middle of nowhere itself can be kind of, I guess, quote unquote creepy. But honestly, by the time we were ready to leave, I had a migraine for 2.5 days. I was ready to die. Like if you had been like, there's a rattlesnake behind you, I probably would have just fallen on it. So
stepped on his head, like,
yeah,
who cares.
But yeah, there was nothing. I mean, I've talked about this before. There's nothing I could ascribe paranormal or supernatural traits to about being in there the entire time I was in there. There just wasn't. I was in the woods, you know, like and I grew up in the woods, despite the fact that I am a self-absorbed urban fool. there's a forest behind my house, and as a kid, I was in that forest every day, all day, from year round, 365, we were in the woods. So to me, that still feels like home. I mean, there's a reason Mark and I like hiking and going into CVMP and all that kind of stuff. Like, it just feels like home. So just being in there itself was not creepy. And even things like the eye shine and the noises, I just didn't feel creeped out. It just felt like you were witnessing a natural behavior by a natural animal in its natural habitat. That's what it felt like to me. So that's why I have difficulty, you know, going down the paranormal rabbit trail when it comes to Bigfoot, because what I experienced, whether it was Bigfoot or not, I don't know, but what I experienced did not seem paranormal.
Cool. Next letter. Yes. Have to be careful with this one.
Okay. Because wow, that's a tome.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not going to name names.
Okay.
Because I'm asked not to.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, I've thoroughly enjoyed the recent series of UFO-related episodes, and I'm getting very hyped for the next installment of On the Trail Of. If you're open to episode suggestions, I would love to hear a discussion on black triangles.
Awesome.
In the fall of 2016, I saw a slow-moving, low-flying, at times hovering triangle one night. It had three white lights at the points and a much larger red light in the center that faded on and off very slowly. I had a powerful LED flashlight on me, and it occurred to me to blink at the thing. But at the time, I thought, if this is a drone, I'd prefer not to be surveilled. And of course, if it's something crazy, I definitely don't want it over here. I won't bore you with all the details, but I'll bet I watched the thing for a good 10 to 15 minutes. It was largely soundless, but at its closest point, I could hear a kind of low-frequency roar. My brain was doing backflips trying to bend what I was seeing into a drone, so much so I wouldn't entertain the notion it was a UFO for a good 2 or 3 years. But it bothered me enough that I called STM pal Stan Gordon, and we had a little talk. Anyway, Stan says it doesn't sound like a drone to him, which leaves me having to think about it every week of my life now. I saw the V-shaped model the guy was holding on the Trail Of teaser, so I'm very much hoping you broach the topic in that project. Mm-hmm. One last thing. This book seems interesting. Maybe Mark could read this in preparation for the episode. Triangular UFO Situation by David Marler. The author seems to be a bit of an authority on the topic. Apparently, he gave a talk at UNM, according to my cursory Googling. Thanks for the work you guys do and keep those episodes coming. I'm still a bit shy about attaching my name to my sighting story. The reaction from my wife, dad, and best friend was underwhelming at best, so you can just leave that off if you choose to read any of this. However, I do like the idea of Jarvis as a pseudonym.
Jarvis. That's a good one. Avengers tie-in. The black triangle subject definitely comes up repeatedly, actually, and on the Trail of UFOs, not just with Sean Kevin Jason, who you saw in the trailer holding the model he made, which, by the way, he ascribes human beliefs to he believes that what he witnessed that night was some sort of experimental military craft. That's a really great story that he tells. And the other, so I guess there's two other big, we went to Phoenix. It was actually the very first interview we shot was with Dr. Lynn Kitai, who was a Phoenix Lights witness. And that's kind of like a black triangle. But then this past week in the Hudson Valley, Linda Zimmerman, obviously the Hudson Valley flap, was predominantly black triangles early on. It sort of morphed. It's still going on. It's sort of morphed into orbs and stuff like that now. But early on, those initial sightings were of a very large triangular shaped craft. So that comes up repeatedly. I'd love to do a show just about that. I hope listeners are okay with the show getting a little bit away from like the cryptids for a little while, because I'm kind of neck deep in UFO lore right now, so that's like where my head is at. We should definitely do that for the next string of episodes, which should be coming probably like next week or something. We need to record again, because I'll be gone again.
Right. And I did Jarvis. I did buy the book.
Did you really?
I bought it. Yeah, I've started it. It's good. He's right. This guy is.
I'd like to read it then.
This guy knows his stuff. I'll give it to
Who's
you.
Who's the author?
David Marler, Marler.
Okay. I'd love to. Let's do that for sure. And on the Trail of UFOs gets into to all sorts of not just craft, but unidentified aerial phenomena as well. The Brown Mountain Lights episode, I think, is going to be really cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
It's one of those places that you've read about constantly
in literature. Want to know something real weird? So the Brown Mountain Lights, I've been aware of forever. And as a kid, the church I went to when I was a kid went to Marion, North Carolina for camp. It's actually how I know Paul, Shirley.
Oh, okay.
And Alan.
Yeah.
And so
that's
Alan's from Marion. And so like I've been going there my whole life twice a year, from the time I was, 12 until I was, 25, something like that. You know, like I was down there all the time. Brown Mountain Lights are a Marion zip code, which I had no idea. Wow. It's right there. Like Lake James is right there. It's all right there. So my whole life I'd been going there and never had connected the two until we got there, punched in the zip code or the coordinates for Brown Mountain Overlook. And it said Marion. I had no idea that that's where I was. So that was kind of cool. The other weird thing about that is a lot of my family's from Hickory, and Hickory's right there. So like, apparently not only I'd also been going to church camp for years, right down the road from like the Breedlove family. Home. Yeah. Ancestral home. So that was kind of weird. It's all right in an area that I'm very familiar with. So that's kind of funny.
Did you drive by the old campground while you were out
The actual camp is up on Lake James, which they shot some of Last of Mohicans on Lake James.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I love Last of Mohicans. But yeah, we didn't go up there. It's considerably easier to get up to the camp now than it would have been when I was a kid. When you were a kid, there was a gravel road that went up the mountain. You were on the gravel road for about an hour. And now I think there's a road out of town that gets up there in 10 minutes. Yeah. It's paved and there's houses being built all over. And yeah, it's like a vacation destination now. Was there more to that?
There's one more. Yeah. No, I mean,
there's another letter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Yeah. Hey guys, just recently found your podcast and I started from the beginning. I'm really enjoying it. Today I'm listening to the Beast of Bray Road episode. One of you commented about hoping it's not a man dog beast. Made me think of Man Bear Pig on South Park. I hope you're old enough to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we're pretty sure
older,
we're
older. Yeah. Yeah, never mind. Thankfully, I've never had an encounter with any cryptid type creature, and I hope I never do, but I love hearing about other people's experiences. Keep up the good work, and that's Valerie in Jacksonville, Florida.
Cool. Jacksonville. I just drove through there. Yeah, Man Bear Pig. I'm acquainted. I want to see a cryptid.
Yeah,
like who doesn't?
Well, that's
she doesn't.
Yeah, that's the old thing. Everyone says they want to see one, except the people who see them always say they wish they hadn't. That's an interesting paradox.
You know, her mentioning Jacksonville just reminded me. We did get to go to Cape Canaveral. And as part of On the Trail of Filming, and it was surreal because it was Adrian and Tommy and I and Shannon, and the footage should be in the series, but it was really kind of cool to have Adrian and Tommy with us while we're doing filming, you know.
Yeah,
we got in for free. Jeez, what the heck is happening with me? We did get in for free, which was awesome, and that was because of one of Shannon's listeners to ITF. So we got into, he works down there, so like we got into the Space Center for free and everything. But it was when people use the word humbling a lot in silly ways, like you know, like someone saying, oh, this is just an example, this may or may not have happened. Like yesterday I may have read on Facebook, someone was like, I was interviewed for a major radio show out of the UK, truly humbled. You know, like, I just don't know. I don't know that you understand the meaning of that, but, I'll tell you what's humbling is seeing some of the spacecraft. I can't remember what they actually have in the Space Center that you can walk in and see it, but you want to feel tiny. Look at the size of one of those things and then imagine all that went into building it and where it's been. This is the actual craft, where it's been, what it's done. You can see the scorch marks on the hull. That'll humble you.
Sure.
yeah.
The idea that somebody was sitting on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah. There it's a crazy thing. The space program has never, I never wanted to be an astronaut as a kid. I did love Space Camp, the movie. but like my knowledge of, yeah, but my knowledge of like NASA and stuff was minimal. But they do a really good job of sort of explaining all that went into building the space program and getting it to where it is today, which is unfortunately not that much further off than it was back then. But
did you ever read The Right Stuff?
No, and I haven't seen the movie yet either. I need to.
The book is awesome. I can't comment on the movie.
I've seen the movie Space Cowboys, starring Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
So I don't know where I was going with that, other than to say that we got to do that. That was part of the for real listeners, like the on the trail of UFOs, East Coast leg of filming stretched from, it was approaching 14 days that Shannon was up. She flew into Orlando. We shot all up on our trip back to Ohio. And then we continued filming all through that East Coast, you know, like up into New England and all that. So we saw the full scope of the East Coast of the United States in less than like 12 days. And it was really crazy from all the way down in Florida, all the way up to the New Hampshire beaches. So, but yeah, that NASA thing, have you been there to
Canaveral? Yeah, a long time ago. Like yeah. I was 12 years old, I think, when we were there.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. Pretty cool.
What about, give me your, like 30 second take on Star Wars, whatever the land is at Disney.
Oh, I want to live in it.
Okay.
Apparently people are complaining about it. And so I can't imagine complaining about it.
Okay.
I kind of didn't expect anything because I'm a huge, I grew up obsessed with Star Wars as a kid. Like when I graduated high school, I got like $1,200 or something. And I went and spent every dime on Phantom Menace stuff because it was 99.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was obsessed with Star Wars as a kid, but it's kind of died off a little bit. I've really enjoyed all the movies and stuff, but I wasn't that hyped about it. And then I got there and I felt like I was 18 again. Mm-hmm. Like I really did. I was geeking out over everything.
Yeah.
And I got genuinely emotional seeing the Millennium Falcon. Like, wow. It was like you were seeing the actual millennium. It's that it's like on that scope. And, but it is so well themed. It's probably better themed than any of the newer Star Wars areas that I've seen. The closest I can come to what I experienced there is what I think Tokyo Disney Sea is like. Cause Tokyo Disney Sea is where I will, it's on my bucket list. Like okay. I've got to go. Cause there's the whole Jules Verne area and like 20,000 Leagues.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm obsessed with that stuff. And that seems like as close as you can get to that in America with Disney. But it's so well themed. Like you, I'm not crying. You're crying.
Yeah, I'm crying.
No, the mountains in the distance it looks like you're seeing off and onto the horizon with like, you know, with, It's like being in another galaxy far away.
Awesome.
It's really like there was only the one ride. We didn't go on any rides in Disney in the Star Wars area. The line was like 130 some minutes if we wanted to go on. So we didn't, you know, we were kind of moving through kind of quick too. It was extremely hot when we were there and we had Adrian's grandma who's in her 80s and stuff like that. So we didn't go on any of the rides, but just being in there. And then later everyone went to Toy Story Land, which kind of adjoins that. And I wasn't going on any of those rides. So I snuck back into Star Wars Land and walked around by myself.
Nice.
And just kind of like took it in. And that was my second time in a single day. And it still like hit me.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's really cool.
That's amazing.
I love it. Yeah. Just the marketplace is.
Yeah.
And everyone in there is acting their part and they did a great job of it.
Is there Wookiees?
We did. We saw Chewie, and I want to say we did see two other Wookiees walking around.
Nice.
Yeah, and we saw Ewoks over in the Star Wars. The old Star Wars land is still there in the old Star Wars area with Star Tours and all that.
Right.
Which that's kind of weird to me that they didn't find a way to build those two areas closer to each other. But they should move Star Tours to that end of the park. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you wouldn't. But yeah, it's great. Highly recommended. 25 minutes into the show, we're going to hit the theme of the show, which is Halloween.
Halloween.
The spooky time of year. As I've gotten older, I've really grown to appreciate Halloween, and especially some of the stuff like the classic monster, Universal monster movies and things like that. And getting to like see Tommy react to like, we took him to Boo at the Zoo. And he's worn his leopard costume for 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And getting to see him like run around and get candy and everything. And he's so stinking cute when he talks about his candy. He calls it my candies. So yeah,
that kid's a trendsetter.
Yeah. I don't have like the same connection to it that I think a lot of kids or people do. Like, what was your Halloween experience as a kid?
Well, the tie in with me and what you were talking about before is like the first costume I can remember being super proud of. I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and it was one of those out of the box Cooper Star Wars Darth Vader. So, and I still have a picture of that.
Oh wow, yeah.
And it's just the mask that's held on with the rubber band basically and the plastic front, so it actually had Darth Vader's picture, like his head.
Yeah, I think I've seen that
on the chest and the cape. And I mean, I had that mask at least for probably a decade after that.
My favorite Halloween costumes are the ones where it'll blatantly tell you what you're looking at. So you see Optimus Prime for like a little kid, it says Optimus Prime on it. Like you can't just tell by looking at it.
Here's what it is. But yeah, my experience was that was, and in some ways still is, one, if not the favorite holiday, one of the favorite holidays of the year, because of the monster connection, the spooky stuff. And I got to a point in my like junior high years where I started to get into, and sort of before this became a huge thing, but would do the front of our,
before it was cool.
Yeah. The whole setup at your house. So I'd have stuff in the windows. I hooked up a ghost to a string and a hook. So anytime my mom would open the door.
It was like a William Castle movie.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Had had a cassette that I looped for, so it was like an hour of sound effects coming out of the garage. Mm. And even to the degree that I dressed up like a scarecrow and would sit there on the front stoop like I was just a stuff thing, and people would come up and I'd do the jump scare thing.
Did you have friends?
Yeah.
So I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't at that point in my life.
I had a few, and if they would help me with my exploits, then all the better.
Did kids do like, was there a lot of like, vandalism or anything like that in your neighborhood?
There was a little bit.
Yeah.
See, the weird thing is I grew up in central rural Michigan.
Yeah.
So at that time, and I'm talking mostly about the mid to late 80s, Halloween was huge. And we lived on the street that went down to the county park. So it was heavily trafficked. I mean, it was Halloween, a steady stream for a couple hours.
Yeah.
But we lived about probably 2.5-3 hours from Detroit. And Detroit was well known, still is, for the Devil's Night stuff, which is the night before Halloween, where it was a straight up arson.
Yeah.
And destroying cars and stuff like that.
The Purge.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's based off of that in some ways. But where we lived, you'd get an occasional egging.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
There's
maybe
a lot of
soap
TP.
Your windows. Yeah.
Soap your windows.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one.
It would write or draw designs with soap.
They did
scrape it off.
In my neighborhood, there was a fear of TPing. So like, if I remember right, my dad would wait up just to make sure we didn't get TP'd or like we'd be out watching, you know, or we were out TPing ourselves. Kids used to throw pumpkins. Like I can remember one time walking down the street around, I don't think it was on Halloween, but it was around Halloween time. Like these kids came roaring through in a car and threw a pumpkin at us.
Whoa.
Yeah. And like, that's bad news.
But yeah,
like,
that is.
But, But yeah, but I grew up in middle of nowhere, you know, Bolivar, Ohio. That's all kids did back then. I remember one time, and I've thought about this my whole life, wondering if we experienced a Bigfoot incident. I don't know if I've even told you this.
No.
We were driving one night out near Atwood Lake, middle of nowhere, and someone or something standing on a hill up in the woods threw a collection of rocks and like squash at our car, at my pickup truck. It hit it like hard. Mm-hmm. And that was around Halloween time. But the thing about it that's weird is we immediately stopped because we were in a convoy. There were two or three cars. We stopped our cars and like seven or eight of us ran up into the woods right where this would have come from. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing up there. And I've always thought about that. It's like, it's a weird place for there to be kids because where this happened, there's no one living, you know, like not in the immediate area. And it was on this hill, this wooded hill. And I was like, what if it was just a Bigfoot messing with us?
Wow.
Yeah.
Throwing his famous squash concoction.
Squash and rocks. Happy Halloween, he says. So one thing I said to you about the Halloween episode is we should talk about our creepiest experiences. I have three I wrote down. I don't know about you, but scary, I guess personal scary stories. So I'm going to let you start this off.
Okay. Spooky, I have two.
Spooky time.
I have two. They're related, but I will.
Good. I'll condense mine down to two.
I'll let you. Well, okay. They all happened the same year and it was very, very odd. I was doing my pastoral internship, which is like the third year of a four-year program. Mm-hmm. This was in Zanesville, Ohio. And I mean, anyone who gets to know me at all pretty much figures out right away that I like paranormal, supernatural, cryptozoology, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the X-Files was hitting in a major way because this was 95, 96.
Remind me to play the On the Trail of theme for you that Brandon hooked up, by the way.
So, you know, it became known that I was an X-Files fan and he likes UFOs and Bigfoot and all this. But they teased me about it and stuff, but that's about the extent of it. Well, anyway, I'd been there. It's a year-long program and probably a half a year had gone by. And the church office got a phone call from a friend of a friend type thing. Asking if our church did anything for ghosts and possessions. It wasn't a true possession situation, but they asked if a pastor would come out and just talk to this person, go through their home. So my supervising pastor and I went out to this house in Zanesville. And if people have been through that area, they know that it's a location with deep history. There's a lot of very, very old homes and a lot has happened in that area. So we go into this old house and we're talking to the main experiencer and her, I will say, infant son, no more than 2 years old. And so she proceeds to tell us about how she has this history of seeing an apparition in their home that she knows that it's this particular one because it's typically wearing a plaid shirt. She's seen the plaid shirted ghost or whatever it is in a rocking chair, different places throughout the house. And the reason she called us is that things had started to escalate into a violent interaction. And that most recently she was pushed down a flight of stairs by what she believes was this plaid shirted entity.
Paul Bunyan.
Oh, the bounty paper towel guy. But so she's telling us this story and we're sitting in her front room and it's this oldish house, but nothing really creepy is happening. And but we're listening to her go through sort of this case by case story about the plaid ghost. And so my supervisor and I kind of take that in, and then finally we say, okay, well, what we're going to do is go room by room through the house, say a prayer in each room, and then you can let us know, you know, how things transpire. So her little kid, her little boy, who had been sort of playing around her knee the whole time, very happily, as soon as we start into our first prayer, he starts to just scream and wail as if he had been pinched. I really hadn't closed my eyes for the prayer, so I was watching him, and it was just really distressing because in just a moment's notice, he went from this little happy kind of hanging on his mom's hip to like torqued, really upset. And that lasted for about 30 seconds to a minute, and then he calmed down. And then we just went room by room through this home, saying a prayer and reading some scripture. And, you know, that took about probably 10 minutes to go through the house. And we left. And so we kept in contact with the woman, and she didn't have any other bad experiences, at least in the rest of that half year. So. Mm. Just being there to see that little kid kind of go through this little transformation, that was really unsettling.
It was super creepy.
Yeah.
Anything with a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last night I was standing outside. This is not my creepy story, but I was standing outside with Tommy, and Tommy's pointing at the sky. And I was like, what is it? And he goes, something's coming. He's been saying it lately. So I think he just likes saying something, the word something. So okay. He adds kind of, so.
Or maybe says, E.T.'s going to come.
Yeah, or E.T.'s coming. He's obsessed with that movie.
Yeah.
He hasn't stopped watching it in like 3 months. So he's like, something's coming. And then I was like, I looked up and I was like, what are you talking about? And he pointed, and I said, the cloud. And he said, yeah, the cloud hurts me.
Whoa.
And so I still don't know. He just, you know, like kids are creepy, man. They just string words together for no reason. I think half the time they're doing it to mess with you. So yeah, that's not my creepy story. I guess I'll give one now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if I've talked about this on the show, but my parents owned a building in downtown Bolivar, Ohio, that was really old, like built in the very early 1800s. It's one of the oldest buildings in downtown Bolivar. And you know, like all my life kind of growing up in that building, we all experienced different things there. And there was even like, my sisters had this running thing that there was a good ghost living on the second floor and there was a bad ghost in the basement. You didn't mess with the basement after dark, and like you didn't go down there especially if you were in the building alone. And it really was kind of a creepy building. At night you would hear, you know, what sounded like footsteps. There was a door in the upstairs room, the second floor. There was another floor above that with no stairs to it, and there was a door on the wall. So you'd walk into this big open room, and then you'd turn around, there's just the door. And sometimes the door would randomly open, you know. And like, I know I eventually did look up in that room with a ladder one time, and there's like nothing in there, some dead birds and stuff on the floor, but it's just an empty attic room basically. But so it was, the building could be creepy, but we were in the basement one time and like the electricity went out, or my brother shut the light off on me. Oh. I was downstairs, shut the light off. And, you know, I wasn't scared. He shut the light off. And when he did, I could see on the far end of the wall in the one room that I was in, it had been bricked off with like concrete, big concrete bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And when he shut the light off, there was light coming through a crack in one of the bricks. Like you could see light coming through a crack. And I thought that was really weird, because to my knowledge, there was no room over there. I mean, I thought there was a room. It was kind of strange because that room I was in was shorter than the room next to it, but they both ran in the same direction. So it's almost like someone had bricked it off for some reason at some point after it had been built. So I went and I turned the light back on, and then I went down to the far end where the crack was, and I peeked I put my eye up to the crack, and you could see a beam of light on the other side of this. Like it looked like you were looking into a long black room, and you could see this beam of light coming through somewhere. And it freaked me out, because I was like, there's nowhere that could be coming from. We went upstairs, went out on the street, and looked for a sewer grate or like something where light could be coming through, and there was nothing. And this was clearly beyond where the building upstairs ended, because where the wall was at, I was already close to where the building upstairs ended. And so that's my creepy story. We don't know that if you went there today and looked in, you might still see that beam of light. Huh. In fact, like when my parents sold the building, one of the last times I was in there, I looked through that hole to see if that beam was still there. Yeah. It was still there.
Wow.
I don't know where it's coming from. There's nothing where the beam of light is. There's nothing upstairs and outside. So more than likely it's a gateway to another dimension. And you're seeing...
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, you're seeing the other dimension.
Dimensional.
Yeah, on the other side. That's the portal.
Little energy release there, going on.
There's so many creepy stories about that building. When we had my parents' 50th anniversary, that we rented the upstairs of that building because it's since become a restaurant. It's a really good restaurant. It's like a barbecue restaurant. And we rented this second floor. And when I was up there, I came out of a room and I caught a brief glimpse of something very quickly moving through. And I don't know what it was, but it was fitting. I smiled because it was fitting to me because that was the type of stuff that used to happen all the time. My mom would get creeped out in there. She was in there a few times after the store closed. And she told me one time she was working on the catalog upstairs in her office and she got the immediate sense she needed to get out of there. So she left. And my mom isn't easily scared, by the way. Mm-hmm. Probably tougher than I. So that's my kind of spooky story.
Wow.
I've got a better one coming up next.
Okay. Well, my other story, I'll make this one quick, but it was the same year.
Abducted.
Down in Zanesville. We got within probably 2 or 3 weeks of the first call, we got a second call.
Ooh.
And keep in mind that my pastoral supervisor had interns like me for probably 25, 26 years consecutively. So different guy coming in every year. He had never gotten any calls like this ever before. So I'm not sure what that says, but somebody else called, different location, kind of a nondescript brick house, but they said that they had been bothered by some sort of classic dark spirits. Today you'd call them shadow people or the hat man, but back then they weren't as well known. Again, this is mid-90s. And to the degree that they felt like there were these short entities that came into their bedroom and gather around their bed, and then a large hooded classic death sort of figure came in and leaned out over their bed, clearly intimidating them, and other things were running up on their ceiling, and they're just cowering in bed, and they were not religious people whatsoever. But
sounds a lot like a night terror.
Yeah, but it's shared is the interesting thing. Ooh. They both claim to be seeing these things.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah, and not religious, but they started praying the Lord's Prayer, they said, and that the things started to leave the room. And they claim to have had other experiences in their basement, sort of the cold draft out of nowhere on a hot summer day, that type of thing. So we did the same thing for them. I mean, we started to, as we did the other family, which is to go in and do some prayers in the home and do a blessing of the home. But during my just brief inspection of the place, I mean, there was evidence there that maybe there wasn't stuff they were telling us, because it seemed obvious to me that they were at least dabbling in opening the portal for perhaps some of these things to come in, and they bit off more than they could chew. I won't say too much more about the specifics, and I'll tell you later, but to me it seemed like there was evidence that they had done a little, they had experimented maybe just to see what would happen, and something happened that they weren't planning. So again, we didn't hear from them again, so we took that to mean that either they weren't being bothered anymore or that they just didn't want to bring us back in to the situation.
There's a lot of similarities between those type of phenomena and the alien abduction phenomena. There's Gary had some things he said that, first of all, some of Gary's stories rang eerily similar to Barry Clark's.
Oh yeah.
But also like some of the things he talked about remind me of there's just similarities mm-hmm. between like shadow people and all that and alien abduction. I've had night terrors, and this isn't my story either, but okay. I've had night terrors. It can be set up for my story. I've had night terrors since I was little, and this is probably a strangely personal thing to share on the show. But like when I was a kid, my things in my room would float around the room and I would scream and run out of the room. And it was because, you know, like my brain was still dreaming, but my mm-hmm. body was waking up. But the Hat Man, is a character that I've seen since I was little. So like wow. I all the way back to when I was little, I would wake up in the middle of the night and he'd be standing in my doorway, even though the door was, that's why I have to typically sleep with the door closed, is it freaks me out. Cause mm-hmm. like I have these memories of a tall shadowy figure with a top hat on coming to my door and watching me, you know. And it got really bad maybe about 10, 11 years ago. There was some stuff going on like just some life things mm-hmm. and it got really bad, and I dealt with it by screaming. It was like how I'd wake myself up by just, you know, like yelling. And and then that was the last time it really happened. So I think it was kind of a combination of what was going on at the time, just all the stress and stuff. And then, you know, like waking myself up seemed to work out. Mm-hmm. I did get to the point, I wasn't screaming out of fear. I wasn't even scared. I'd wake mm-hmm. up and he'd be there. I was more annoyed than anything because mm-hmm. I really wanted to go to sleep. It was happening like every night. And I got rid of it through that. So people try to tell me all the time, I experienced like, maybe you were abducted or maybe you were experiencing something paranormal. For me, I know that that's not the case. Like, I know that what I was experiencing was a night terror. It happened most of my life. Why it's that particular character, I don't know. That's spooky. It's a spooky looking, you know, character. Mm-hmm. That's something that if you think about, like, sorry, listeners, that was my phone. If you think about like, you know, a sort of typical villainous character, that's a good one. That's probably the first one that comes to mind. Like what's the most stereotypical looking villain you can conjure in your head? It's going to be a tall guy in a black coat with a mustache and a top hat. Mm-hmm. So anyway, have I told the Boulderado story on the show?
No.
Okay. So yeah, a few years ago, I was flown out to Boulder, Colorado for George Norrie's Beyond Belief show that's on Gaia. I don't even know if it's still on.
Yeah, it's still going. It is.
So yeah, I flew out to Boulder and they put me up at a hotel called the Boulderado. And I was super excited because I've never been out to Colorado. And I was just pumped up. So I went out there and on my first night there, I went to sleep. And in the middle of the night, I woke up and at the foot of my bed, there was a woman in white standing, clear as day, like just a woman in white. And I woke up and I looked at her and I think I said something, because it's like I said about my night terrors to try to wake myself up. I don't think I screamed or anything, but I was like, oh, hey, you know, or something like that. I wasn't scared. And when I said it, it was like someone had hit fast forward on a VCR, you know, which is why this is what I talk about this all the time. But I'm pretty convinced this was a night terror because of this detail. She moved to the side of my bed right next to me as if someone hit fast forward on a VCR, which is a very stereotypical horror movie effect, especially after things like The Ring, and you know, like they do that all the time, and that's why I'm pretty sure this was a night terror. But she fast forwards to the side of my bed and she's just looking down at me, and I couldn't see like details of her face or anything. It was just a woman in white mm-hmm. in a white dress, and I think I just rolled over and turned my back to her and I fell back asleep, and that's it. Like that, yeah, that's the story. But the creepy part is the next morning I woke up and I looked up online if the Boulderado is haunted. And sure enough, it apparently is the most haunted building in Colorado, or Boulder, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And it is especially haunted by a woman in white who hangs out on the second floor. However, her room number was not my room number.
Oh.
So the room number where people see her was like two doors down from mine. But I was in the vicinity of the woman in white.
Wow.
And you can read about her today. If you Google search Boulderado Hotel Haunted, you'll find stories about the woman in white. I'm still convinced it was a night terror because of that little...
The glitch.
The glitch, yeah. The glitch effect. So those are my spooky, not so spooky stories. That's it. That's all I've got. Halloween. What a time. What a time. I hope you're getting candy. And all things wonderful. Enjoy your time with your kids and their costumes, because this is one of my favorite things about this time of year. It's hilarious and adorable simultaneously.
Carve a jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah.
You know, carve a STM theme jack-o'-lantern and put it up online.
Yeah, and I'll buy it.
It's a great time. I have happy memories and probably will do this again to a certain degree. Maybe not the marathon, but you know, when Andy was little, we'd watch Universal Monster movies like one after the other.
And yeah.
The non-negotiable is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Hold That Ghost and Meet Frankenstein are two of my favorite. Hold That Ghost as a kid genuinely scared me. Meet Frankenstein never scared me. The Universal Monsters have never scared me. I love them, but I was never scared by them. But Hold That Ghost has, I believe it has a painting with moving eyes.
Yeah.
Which is just, there's no way for that not to be incredibly creepy. Those are good.
Oh, man.
I want to introduce Tommy. So I bought Meet Frankenstein last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to introduce him to that. And I'll probably... watch The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Not the Tim Burton one, but the Disney cartoon with him. Maybe I'll show him the Tim Burton one. I don't know. Probably not. I don't think Adrian's gonna go for that.
Right.
Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening on Halloween. Hope everyone has a happy Halloween. We'll be back with normal episodes again, starting next week. And we'll do some theme stuff and get back into discussing particular topics and staying on topic. This episode was kind of on topic.
Yeah.
We might have some news too. We're excited. There's a lot of things happening right now behind the scenes with STM, and we're really hopeful that some of this we can talk about fairly soon. I think that's it for now.
All right. Happy Halloween.
Yep.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.